Hello there! Welcome back to Moving Right Along, a Muppet Movie podcast brought to you by ToughPigs.com. This is the podcast where we watch the Muppet Christmas Carol 2 minutes at a time and talk about it a lot. I'm your host, Ryan Rowe.
I'm your other host, Anthony Strand.
And hey, good news everybody! Our guest from last week is back, my favorite guest. I like this guest a lot. Guest, please tell us who you are.
I am Stacey Rosen, and I am wed to Ryan.
Yeah. Thanks for being here.
But wed to Ryan, not wed to an old man born in 1926.
Yes, correct.
As we established last episode.
Then it's really weird that you just decided to listen to only the last episode of this podcast. So
well, this is the second to last. We got one more this season still.
Oh, really?
Yeah, believe it or not.
Yeah, there's more credits after these credits.
An ultimate episode.
Yeah, so everybody stay subscribed to this feed. There's more to come. Yes, and in addition to that, Stacey has contributed a number of articles to the Tough Pigs website and written several of the podcast theme songs for us. So.
That's true.
Happy to have you here.
Yes.
And this week we are talking about minutes 85 and 86 of The Muppet Christmas Carol, in which mice and Charles Dickens say goodbye and the closing credits begin. And this picks up with the camera continuing to crane up from last time. And we do pass this family of mice. It's everybody's favorite. It's the cute little mice who wanted the cheese and then they got the cheese. And now here they are way up in one of these high windows of this building and giving us a friendly wave and saying goodbye.
Yeah. It's cute. That's all. That's all I have to say about it.
Does this predate the invention of the elevator?
I would think so.
Are those mice in a walk-up?
I think given the hints that we've been given about the economic status of these mice, they would only be able to afford a walk-up in London. They would not be able to afford an elevator building.
Right. I can help you out, Anthony, because the elevator was invented by Leopold, played by Hugh Grant in the romantic comedy Kate and Leopold.
Hugh Jackman.
No, Hugh Jackman. Hugh Jackman. Wrong Hugh.
Hugh Jackman. Because here's the thing about Kate and Leopold and Hugh Jackman. That movie was directed by James Mangold, who directed The Wolverine and Logan. So it's kind of like their trilogy.
I love that. Okay, I'm going to look into that further. Can't believe I botched his name.
Yeah, yet to see The Wolverine.
Hugh Grant has starred in a lot more romantic comedies than Hugh Jackman.
So that's true, yeah.
Like, it's
always playing the exact
mistake.
Same character, which is, I think, just himself.
Whoa. I'm sorry. You think he's the same character in Notting Hill and Bridget Jones's Diary? Really?
Okay, no, that's fair. Those are very different. And actually, in Paddington, very different.
Well, that's Paddington not a romantic too. Comedy, but yes, that was a tour de force for him.
But it is love story.
He's so good in that. He's so good on Paddington 2. It is. Paddington 2 is definitely my favorite movie where Sally Hawkins has a touching underwater scene with a non-human creature.
I mean, The Shape of Water is good, but yeah, I think I'm going to have to agree with you there.
It's not as good as Paddington 2. And the relationship's not as convincing. I don't think. Like,
yeah.
I think Paddington and Sally Hawkins have better chemistry than Doug Jones and Sally Hawkins. I truly do.
But Paddington 2, not even nominated for Best Picture.
And I like Shape of Water fine. I don't think it's a bad movie or anything like
that. Were the Paddington movies both written by the same screenwriters?
Good question.
I thought you might know off the top of your head. Whoever they are.
I know they were both directed by Paul King. I know that.
Okay. Whoever they are, they would be a good choice or choices for writing a Muppet movie.
My instinct is that they were not the same screenwriters. The second one was written by Paul King and Simon Farnaby. Mm-hmm. I can tell you that because I clicked on Paddington 2 first. And Paddington was written and directed by Paul King. So he wrote the first one by himself and then had a co-writer for the second one.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, he'd be a great choice to write and direct a Muppet movie. I would be all about that.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Let's start a campaign.
He's making he has the Willy Wonka prequel coming out this year with Timothy Chalamet, which seems like a waste.
Yeah, we'll see.
You know,
he's playing Timothy Chalamet is playing a young Willy Wonka.
Yeah. And he's dressed like Gonzo in this movie.
Yeah. this movie, which is The Muppet Christmas Carol, the next thing, my next note is so boring. As the camera continues to crane up, it passes the roof of the house that the mice are in. And I think there's a transition here, like an optical effect, where we go from the house that, like, the top of the roof of the house that's actually on the set, and maybe there's just a blue screen or something, to these miniatures of the London rooftops. But there's never like a dissolve or a cut or anything. It just goes, the camera just keeps moving. So that's a very cool, seamless, whatever they did there. And this is when Rizzo says, "Nice story, Mr. Dickens." And Gonzo says, "Well, thanks. If you like this, you should read the book."
And I couldn't agree more.
Yeah, Anthony's been reading the book this entire podcast season.
Is it supposed to be a joke in some way, though? Because the way he says it and the timing of it is almost as if it's supposed to give you a chuckle.
Yeah, because I think it's like, this is a movie starring the Muppets. So it's like, go read an actual book from 1843. Like, I think it's like, if we're a kid in the audience, that's a joke, right? Like, I don't know.
Well, and just that I think everybody knows, or most people know, that it is based on a book. So I think it's also to give the parents a little chuckle, like, oh, right, yes, it is a book.
Oh, yeah. Yes, A Christmas Carol.
Right. I don't know. It's a nice little button on the movie. And they're promoting literacy. And it's
definitely scripted, right?
Oh, yeah.
It must be. Yeah, I think so.
And it's good that they're promoting literacy. This is encouraging kids to read. It's also like those little PSAs that used to be at the end of TV specials in the 80s and 90s, where an actor from the special would tell you about some books that you could check out from your local library about the same subject matter as the special that you just watched, including The Muppets Celebrate Jim Henson, which ends with Gonzo telling you about some Muppet-related books that you can check out and read all about it. So this is just continuing Gonzo's tradition of encouraging us to read.
Promoting literacy, yeah. Gonzo is kind of like the LeVar Burton of the Muppets.
Yeah. Huh.
Well, did you ever do it? Did you listen to Gonzo and check out the book?
I did. I've read it multiple this times. Book?
I've read it, maybe once or twice, but a long time ago. I should probably read it again.
I just finished reading it again over the course of many months.
Anthony has been exhausted reading it.
It's short. I mean, like the I'm looking at the annotated book right now. The text in here is 163 pages, but it's not 163. It's like usually more like 100.
Gotcha.
You know, in most editions. Yeah.
It's not that long.
Who it's annotated long. It?
Yeah. A guy named Michael Patrick Hearn. Michael Patrick Hearn, a British literary scholar who has written annotated editions of many books.
Cool.
And he's American. I should note.
Oh.
He is an American scholar who is a scholar of British and American literature. His works include The Annotated Wizard of Oz, The Annotated Christmas Carol, and The Annotated Huckleberry Finn, is what his Wikipedia page says.
Hmm. I would read The Annotated Wizard of Oz for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, man.
The only annotated thing I've ever read is the Hamilton annotated.
Oh, yeah, that giant book.
Libretto.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, Hamilton : The Revolution is the title.
Yeah. And I know Ryan has the Phantom Tollbooth annotated. I'd like to read that sometime.
Oh, cool. That exists.
Yeah, it's really good. I don't remember who did the annotations though, but
Right. I have so I've read a few different ones. I really like if I haven't read a classic novel, I like to get the annotated version because it's kind of like I'm watching the DVD and the behind the scenes extras at the same time.
At the same time. Yeah.
You know?
You would read it for the story, first time with the annotations?
I recently read Little Women and Dracula both for the first time with the annotations.
Cool.
And because I know both of those stories so well. You know,
well, like, okay, yeah.
What, you weren't going to get spoiled, what, possibly.
Right. And that's what I decided was I've seen at least four movie adaptations of each of those novels. Like at least four. you know?
Yeah.
And I just thought, you know what? I know what Little Women is. I'm going to get a lot more out of like reading it with, and it's great. John Matteson was the name of the annotator, and it's very focused on like, here's how it does or doesn't reflect Louisa May Alcott's actual life. Oh. You know, it's very like this moment is something that happened to her actual sister who Amy is based on or whatever, you know? And it's great. I thought it was fascinating. I loved it.
Yeah, that would be.
And then annotated Dracula. Can I say this? Is this boring? I don't know.
No.
Keep going. The annotated Dracula that I read was a lot more disappointing.
Oh.
It was written by a guy named Leslie S. Klinger, and he had previously done a well-regarded annotated Sherlock Holmes.
Mm-hmm.
And which I haven't read. I've only read a few Holmes stories, but that the premise was like that he's working from John Watson's papers and it all happened. Like was the premise of that annotated Holmes. So he does the same thing here and like treats, cause Dracula is an epistolary novel. It's all written in letters.
Yeah.
So he treats the whole thing like these are the actual, like Jonathan Harker wrote these letters or whatever. Bram Stoker just like collected them, and it like, it wears real thin.
Yeah, I bet.
Like, because there is plenty of real information in there, but then he'll always be like, this is inconsistent with something else. Bloobity. And it's like, bro, none of this happened. Like, you know that.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I don't know.
That's a weird way to do that.
Yeah. So those are the three annotated editions of books I've read recently. Mm-hmm. Christmas Carol, Little Women, highly recommend them. Dracula, less.
Okay. But you don't have to take Anthony's word for it.
You can check them out.
Yeah. And read all about it. Annotated Phantom Tollbooth. The annotations are by Leonard S. Marcus. That's also a book that I would recommend.
Oh, and as long as we're talking about the annotated Christmas Carol, real quick. The old Curiosity Shop is officially closed because the book is over. I reached the end of the book, right?
Okay. In
the last episode.
What kind of sound effect should I insert here to indicate that it's closed? Just like a door slamming or
door shutting. Yeah, do the bell and then the door shutting.
Oh, the bell and then the door. Okay, got it.
So anyways, I can put this away now.
Yeah. Oh, he is. Yeah, we're watching him right now, putting the closing the book and putting it away. So there we go. Thanks, Annotated Christmas Carol.
Yeah, it was good. I'm really glad we did that. I think it was fun. I'm excited to do it again next year, even though I don't have nearly as much fondness for Treasure Island as a novel. I'm excited to read it again. I haven't read it since sixth grade.
Yeah, stay tuned. In the movie, we hear the jolly laugh of the Ghost of Christmas Present, our old friend. And then we start to hear a reprise of It Feels Like Christmas as the words "the end" appear on the screen. And I'm sure we've talked about this the last three movies, but you both know that I'm a big advocate of movies ending with the end.
I do.
You are. Yeah. Does Anthony know how I feel about there being two songs in this movie where Christmas is stretched out to three syllables?
I do because you mentioned it on the podcast when we were talking about Muppet Family Christmas.
It for that movie about this
you
movie?
Mentioned it. Yeah, you just mentioned how the next one is gonna have multiple songs where someone goes Christmas. That's what you did it.
Like, I'm nothing if not consistent.
There you go.
Right. You know. I was delighted then and I remain so. Well, just this song, I straight up love this reprise of the song, because here's the thing, this is my favorite song in the movie. I said that when it was on the first time. But what I love about this reprise is that the Ghost of Christmas Present doesn't really sing that much on it. It's mostly the choir.
Yeah.
And then Ghost of Christmas Present just goes, "Merry Christmas." Yes, it does.
Right. Yeah. He chimes in. Yeah. He's just now, these interjections.
Are you familiar with the 90s gospel singer, R&B hype man, Kirk Franklin? You're familiar with Kirk Franklin and the family?
Yeah.
he did this. That's what this has always reminded me of, is on his albums, he has a whole choir, right? It's like Kirk Franklin and the family is a whole choir. Uh-huh. And the choir sings the songs. And then Kirk Franklin just goes, come on. Yes, sir. Listen. Like that's his role, you know, is to just like,
do you think he's recording those separately? Or do you think he's like in the studio with them?
Oh. Yeah, I don't know. Good question. But I've always loved that the closing credits of this movie just have the Ghost of Christmas Present transforming into Kirk Franklin and yelling interjections instead of singing the song.
If I had to guess, and for this movie, they probably recorded the choir singing the song, and then they had Jerry Nelson do the shout out separately as the ghost.
Yeah, probably.
But yeah, it's just a lot of fun. And Stacey, any other thoughts about the song? It feels like Christmas. You were not here when we covered the first version of the song.
Oh, I didn't note anything.
Okay.
This time around.
Cool. So then, yeah, the credits. The it starts with the Muppet performer credits, which is nice to see. If I remember right, the opening credits, I didn't go back to check. The opening credits were just the Muppet characters, or did it also include Michael Caine?
Include Michael Caine is first billed.
In the opening credits. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. And then the Muppet characters. Okay, so now the Muppet performers actually get to have their names listed, which is nice. Starting with Dave Goles getting first billing here.
Which is really nice, because he deserves it on this movie. Like, Gonzo is absolutely the Muppet star of this film.
Right. Yeah.
So I think it's great.
And then Steve Whitmire, Jerry Nelson, and Frank Oz, he gets the "and" credit, which is usually like a kind of reserved for special billing. Then we have with David Redman, Louise Gold, Mike Quinn, Karen Prell, and Rob Tigner. We've talked about all these people in various capacities. Is it me, or did it look like David Redman had a little bit more space under his name?
I agree, and I actually noted that as well.
Yeah.
It looks like there's some contractual reason why David Redman is slightly separated
from the group. I guess.
I don't know what that would be.
I don't.
Well, have you noted that in other productions?
I don't know that we have in other Muppet movies.
No, not that I remember.
He does have, I think, more, like, he's going to be listed in a moment when we see the character listing credits. He's going to be listed as Peter Cratchit and the Swedish Chef, you know.
Right.
And I mean, I don't think Louise Gold gets credited for like Charwoman.
No, that's true. And so I guess David Redman, not quite one of the like the main four guys, but still, has enough to do and enough different characters. And I don't know, but it's interesting. Like, Louise Gold had been working with the Muppets longer than he had at this point, but I guess she maybe didn't play as many characters or
Yeah. And Karen Prell too.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right. So
he has a more determined agent.
Could be. Yes. Maybe sometimes that's all it is, I think. Yeah. And then it just fades to black and we get the rest of the closing credits, starting with Michael Caine as Scrooge. And then we have individual character credits for the main performers. The interesting thing about this, some of them are credited as their Muppet character names and some of them are their Christmas Carol character names. For Dave Goles, it says the Great Gonzo, not Charles Dickens, but then it says Robert Marley and not Waldorf.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Inconsistent.
What's up with that? And for Steve Whitmire, it says Kermit the Frog instead of Bob Cratchit. But for Jerry Nelson, it says Tiny Tim Cratchit and not Robin.
So maybe it's just the characters who are credited by their Muppet name at the front.
Oh,
you know, like we know Kermit the Frog plays Bob. No, because but it doesn't say Statler and Waldorf, right? Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
So we know that Bob Cratchit is Kermit because we saw it up front, and we know that Miss Piggy is Emily Cratchit. So it can say,
well,
Piggy,
and then I noticed, I don't know, all of Frank Oz's characters are credited by their Muppet names. So
even Fozzie.
Yeah. So I don't know what's going on there.
Yeah. And I mean, Piggy and Fozzie are both in those opening credits, like I said. Yeah. And Animal doesn't get a different name, and Sam is the headmaster, but that's not a name. You know,
Yeah, but I mean, they could have discredited him as headmaster. I don't know.
Headmaster. They could. You should probably write them a letter, I think.
Who am I going to address this letter to?
Was there ever like a different opening where they are playing themselves the Muppets and they decide to tell the story? Like, was there ever
not that we know of.
Unless it was in an earlier draft of the script. We haven't been able to get our hands on any.
Because that could potentially explain it. If just like the main initial crew, not including Robin, not including whichever other ones he said were named as their Christmas Carol character, I wonder if there was like a breaking the fourth wall sort of scene at some point.
Yeah, in which case you would expect Kermit to be Kermit and Piggy to be Piggy.
Exactly, and whoever else was in that.
Yeah, but you wouldn't necessarily see Ma Bear. Well, no, that says Ma Bear. It doesn't say Mrs. Fozziwig as Jerry Nelson. So.
But he calls her. But he calls her Ma in the movie. He says, "Take it away to go, Ma."
Yeah, it's Fozziwig's Ma. Yeah.
Who knows? All right.
If anybody does know anything about this, please tell us because this is very curious. And then there's the other. Puppet performers and puppeteers and voice actors. Then there's a credit for Mr. Kane's double. And that person's name is Reginald Turner. I looked him up and he actually has his own page on Muppet Wiki. The wiki says he's the longtime stand-in and photo double for Michael Caine. It also says that we see a lot of Reginald Turner in the Scrooge number in this movie, which makes sense because we don't see Scrooge's face. So a lot of the time when we think we're seeing Michael Caine, we're actually seeing Reginald Turner just skulking around the city from behind. They have a quote from Michael Caine from his memoir saying, "He has perfected my walk and mannerism so exactly that I get lots of free days when he does the long shots." So good for both of those guys. He has also doubled for Michael Caine in the movies Without a Clue, Little Voice, Shiner, and Last Orders, and a TV movie of Jekyll and Hyde. So that's a nice gig that he carved out for himself.
He doesn't walk differently when he's playing different characters.
I guess he always walks like Michael Caine when he's doubling for Michael Caine.
I guess I'm referring to Michael Caine himself. Like, he doesn't change up his walk.
Oh, like, does Scrooge walk differently than the guy from Little Voice? Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. Maybe we should... I didn't actually look to see if Reginald Turner is still with us. Maybe we should try to get an interview with him. If he's still around. Sure. Then there is a credit for additional Muppet performers. There are 38 names here. Now... I think in past seasons, we have tried to go down these lists and at least say a little something about everybody. 38 is a lot of names. So I just encourage everyone. Too many. I encourage everybody to, next time you watch this movie, just take a look at these credits, read all of those names to yourself, and just think about how cool and talented all of those Muppet performers were who helped do the right hands and the penguins and the babies and the lobsters and all those characters that make this movie so much fun to watch. But Anthony, I think you had a couple of specific notes here.
I did. Well, so a lot of these are British performers who weren't in the first three movies.
Sure.
You know, and I know that because I definitely recognize a couple of these names and I wanted to shout them out. One is Nigel Plaskett. And Nigel Plaskett was on Mop-A-Top's Shop, the same show where Mr. Curly Twirly got his name. He played Moosey Mouse, the mouse who lives in Muppet Shop. He all played another mouse. He played Mew in The Secret Life of Toys, the TV series of A Christmas Toy. He took over for Steve Whitmire as Mew on that show. But the reason that he is close to my heart is that he plays the sweet but naive con man Unstuff in The Rebus Operation from Doctor Who, a Tom Baker era classic.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, as a human man, he's not playing a puppet character. Yeah. And so I've just always really liked, because that's one of my favorite Doctor Who stories. Me and Roz dressed up a few years ago for Halloween, me as the fourth Doctor and her specifically as Romana in the Rebus Operation.
Wow.
And because it's one of our favorites. And I just always loved that guy from that story is a Muppet performer.
So he's been working for a while.
Yeah, he was a young man in the 70s. He's like in his like mid-20s or something in that story, which is 1978.
That's
cool.
I'm pretty sure we've mentioned Doctor Who more times on this season than any previous season of this podcast, which is great.
Well, because it's British.
Yes, like, exactly.
You know, and they made a Christmas Carol episode. And Reg Turner was on many Doctor Who stories. We didn't say that. As long as we're talking about it, Reg Turner played a guard or a, you know, unit soldier or whatever without lines in many episodes of Doctor Who.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, I did see that.
Yeah. And the other puppetry I wanted to shout out is John Eccleston, no relation to Ninth Doctor actor Christopher Eccleston. But he did work on another somewhat less beloved, but still beloved sci-fi series, Farscape. He was one of the lead puppeteers for Rigel, one of the main puppet characters on Farscape. But he's close to my heart for being Groove, one of the Hoobs on The Hoobs, a Jim Henson series about characters who figure out what the tiddly peeps are up to, which is what kids are. That's what they call kids because they don't know what they are. Anyways, what, Ryan?
I don't remember what I was going to say. Wait, tiddly peeps are specifically children? They're not just humans?
Yes, peeps are humans. Peeps are humans. And then tiddly peeps are the little ones.
Okay.
Anyways, so there you go. That's the two names that I really recognized and like knew what they had done.
That's great. And like I say, everyone go read all those names. The executive music producer is Robert Kraft. Muppet Wiki tells us that he also produced the 1993 release of the Ralph the Dog album, Old Brown Ears Is Back.
Oh, that rules.
As well as Muppet Beach Party, Kermit and Pig on the Muppet Hits compilations. Yeah, Old Brown Ears Is Back. I don't know if we've ever gotten the full story on that, where apparently Jim Henson recorded the vocal tracks in the 80s, and then they didn't release it until 1993 when they added orchestrations.
Right. It's a strange album because it kind of would. I love the album. I love that we have a whole album of Ralph singing.
Yeah.
A lot of songs from The Muppet Show and a few that aren't. Some songs he sang on The Muppet Show and some songs other characters sang on The Muppet Show. But they're all new recordings, right? It's like it's not the same recording of You and I and George or whatever that he did on The Muppet Show. But it has all these horns over it, and I kind of wish it was just Ralph playing piano.
Yeah. Yeah, I would. Well, if they could do like the Beatles, Let It Be Naked when they took out all the
Phil Spector.
Yeah, exactly. Production. Yeah, just release the Old Brown Ears Is Back Naked. That's what we want to hear.
We call it Old Brown Ears Is Back and Naked. That's what it's called.
Because
he is.
Well, yeah.
Ralph is always naked.
He very rarely wears clothing.
He wears clothes in Dog City, just like Sprocket.
Yeah. Yeah. There we go. Then costume designer Polly Smith. I'm sure we've talked about her in previous seasons. We've definitely mentioned her this season.
Many times. Because she's the best. She's this movie's secret weapon.
Yes, a genius at designing costumes for small puppets, and especially in this one, where they're all period appropriate and adorable winter wear. Choreography by Pat Garrett. Muppet Wiki tells us she also worked on Muppet Treasure Island and the Creature Shop TV productions Alice in Wonderland and Jack and the Beanstalk, The Real Story. And she did some work on Little Shop of Horrors, a movie that all three of us are big fans of.
Yes, and you didn't say King Ralph.
Oh, I did notice King Ralph, yes, in her IMDb credits. Yeah, I don't know. I've never seen King Ralph all the way through. Where is their choreography in that?
There's like a whole big dance number where John Goodman plays the piano and like gets the royal court a hopping.
Nice. I got it. Yeah, I got it.
It's King you list. You don't need, Ryan.
Yeah,
you,
but you I, don't. I think I
it's
should.
Not anything.
Stacey, have you seen King Ralph?
I have no idea what it is.
So King Ralph is a movie where a king of England dies. It might not even be England. It might be like a fake England. And the closest living relative is an American schlub played by John Goodman. And what is very striking about the movie King Ralph is that I don't know for sure that it was written with John Candy in mind, but it feels so much like a John Candy vehicle. Right, he's just this like like big, like dancing. He's just this like dancing bear, which I know John Goodman's the dancing bear in True Stories, but he very much has this like, hey everybody, it's me, the party's starting energy. That's like, that feels like Uncle Buck or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
And John Goodman doesn't really star in movies aside from this one. You know, he starred in Monsters, Inc. But like for the most part he shows up and he's the Cyclops, or he's, you know, the like bad guy in 10 Cloverfield Lane, or he's,
yeah,
like,
he's an interesting
one of the Argo special
guy.
Effects guys or whatever. Was he
Talking Heads movie that I sat through?
Yeah, true stories. Yeah, that's where he's Lewis the Dancing Bear.
Oh,
yeah,
that's
exactly.
That's what that is. Okay. Yeah.
Did you say the movie that I sat through?
Yes.
You know, hey, that's interesting, because you know who loves the movie True Stories? My daughter Iris.
Oh, really?
She thinks it's hilarious. She loves it. She loves everything about it.
It's very quirky. It's not for everyone, but yeah, I think it's terrific.
Right. Well, because I showed her she was little. She was probably 5 or 6. She's probably 6. There's a big fashion show sequence
in the Dream Operator. Yes.
And all the fashions are very strange.
Yes.
And I knew she would enjoy that. And she did. And then she wanted to watch the whole movie. And I was like, absolutely.
Oh, good. Yeah, and so, it's rated PG, I think, if I remember right.
It's rated PG. There's like some double entendres that, mm-hmm. like, I was a little uncomfortable with her, but like not much really. And it's all very mild. I mean, it's like, it's a kids movie in a weird way.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
As much of a kids movie as Pee Wee's Big Adventure is, I think.
Right. Yeah, that sounds about right. So, movie recommendations: King Ralph. See it if you want to. True Stories, see it if you're into strange, quirky things. And Talking Heads music.
King Ralph also features Peter O'Toole as like his majordomo.
Wow. How about
the legendary Peter O'Toole?
Yeah. Then the other credit that I noted for Pat Garrett, she did choreography for the 1999 Christmas Carol with Patrick Stewart.
Yes, which is. She's credited as dance choreographer,
okay.
Which makes me think that she probably did the Fezziwig's party sequence, which is my favorite Fezziwig's party of all time.
Oh,
it's so joyous and lively, and just like everyone seems to be genuinely having a great time in a way that isn't always true, you know, in like period adaptations, you know.
Right.
So I think she's probably deserves a lot of the credit for that. I would have to
guess. Yeah, good job, Pat Garrett. And then as far as I know, she never worked with Billy the Kid.
Yeah.
Now there are a ton of other people who are credited in these credits. I did not write any more of them down, but like I said with the Muppet performers, everyone should go read their names. They all have families. A lot of them worked on other Muppet and Henson projects, so, you know, they've all made big contributions to the stuff that we love. That is all I have for these 2 minutes. Anything else on these 2 minutes? Stacey, starting with you.
Well, you know, when I watch credits, I like to see who provided craft services, and we unfortunately did not get to any sort of craft service credits. So... that was a little bit of a bummer for
me. Sorry. Do you want us to look right now to skip ahead to next? The next 2 minutes?
I don't know what the ethics of that are.
We'll allow it.
Do you think that, I mean, there have to be craft services, right? With all these people around? I know it's filmed differently than a traditional movie. But,
well, yeah, they hired somebody to bring the food. Let's see. Muppet Workshop, Muppet Costumes. Special effects, second unit. It's usually toward the end, right?
Yeah, it's usually one of the last things.
Riggers, plasterers. Okay, no, I just skimmed through the credits, and on a quick skim, I was not able to find the name of the craft services provider, but I will make a solemn vow right now that I will make sure to pay attention to it for next week's episode. And we'll tell everybody who provided craft services for this movie. So that if that doesn't bring people back for next episode, I don't know what will. You got to come back to find out who did craft services.
Thank you for that.
Yes. Was that everything you had? on these 2 minutes?
Yeah, got nothing. Okay. Yeah.
Anthony, anything else on these 2 minutes?
Well, no.
All right. All right. Well, in that case, we can move on to the three questions. Stacey, you are the last guest who we will be asking these three questions this season.
The third question, this is the last time we're going to ask it, because I don't think we're going to ask, do you watch this every year for the
remaining weeks? Oh, that's true. Yeah. This is a big moment. So, but the
first question, I'm not prepared.
The first question is, do you remember the first time you saw this movie and what is your history with it?
So I did see the original theatrical release of it. Remind me, what year was it? 91?
92.
I don't have any real memories of the experience other than being really unhappy, actually, with Steve Whitmire's Kermit. I think that was the first time I had heard it. I don't know if he, I forget if we had heard him do it before.
Not the movie. Not much.
Yeah, nothing.
He does it for about 5 seconds at the end of Celebrate Jim Henson. That's right.
That was really jarring for me. I remember being really vocal about it. It was just tough, you know, I think for everybody. And, you know, I have nothing against Steve Whitmire now, but just at the time, to me, it just didn't sound like Kermit, and I was upset about that. But otherwise, I then did not see it between 1992 and whatever time I watched it with you, Ryan, sometime after 2010.
Right.
So I've probably only seen it maybe three times fully through now. So.
Okay.
And I don't watch... Oh, sorry, that's number three. So what was number two?
Yeah, hold on. Let me ask you this, because I've been interested in hearing people's experience since Danny Horn brought us the box office report from that time. Did you also see Home Alone 2 and or Aladdin in theaters? I assume you did.
Yeah, I saw both,
Those were the other two family movies that were out at the time, and both soundly defeated this movie at the box office.
Trying to think of who I saw this with. I don't think it was my family. I think I that was at the age, you know, when I was 11, that was like my activity to do with friends was going to movies. Like I was allowed to be dropped off at the movies by my parents. So yeah, but I can't say there's certain movies I know exactly who I was with when I saw it, but I can't say with certainty who this was that I saw it with.
Well, the second question, though, is where do you rank this alongside all the other Muppet movies? If, in fact, you can, or some people choose to do a tier system of like really good, good, and not so good.
Ah, sheesh.
Some people just say it's one of the best or it's not one of the best.
Or it's inadequate.
I've never sat and thought about it. I think mostly because it being a holiday movie and an adaptation, I think it kind of like sits in its own category in my mind.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. I've ranked the original three productions, and then when I rank beyond that, I'm usually just including the two newer movies. For whatever reason, this and Muppet Treasure Island, maybe it's an adaptation thing, are not usually included.
Muppets from Space. I just realized
Muppets from Space. Frank, it's good.
That's fine.
Yeah, that
can just be good if that's all you want to say. Yeah, it's not an assignment. Yeah,
but it feels like this is like this is just reminding me right when I came out of my gallbladder removal surgery. Like the second I came out of it, they're asking me all these questions. My eyes aren't even open. They're like, are you in pain? Are you nauseated? What are you feeling? I just felt so much pressure to say the right answer. I was really overwhelmed. I was like, I don't know exactly what I'm feeling. And you just totally honed in on this aspect of me. Like, if you're asking me a question, I really want to be able to provide a well thought out answer. So I might get back to you on where it ranks, but I definitely think it's a strong movie. And I think it's clever. I think it's fun. And yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
I would definitely recommend it to other people.
That's good.
Yeah.
And then finally, and for the last time to a guest, do you watch this every year around the holidays? I already know.
I do not watch it every year during the holidays. Obviously you do, and we live in the same house, but no, not every year, but I do enjoy when we do watch it.
Yeah, I would say, well, I mean, I don't even watch it every single year, or I haven't in my, I don't know, in the last few years. But yeah, I would say most of the time, if I'm watching it, you're going to watch it, unless you're doing something else.
I think I'm more inclined to watch it when it is a group event. So when we used to see it screened at the Museum of the Moving Image.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Or if there were a screening, you know, elsewhere where I was at that time, and I wanted to, like, it's a fun thing to watch with other people.
Yeah.
But I don't feel the need to just watch it on my own.
Yeah, and I think this one and maybe Muppets Take Manhattan are the ones that get screened most often at events, like outdoor movie screenings, and, well, maybe not outdoors for this one because it's cold in the winter, but just because there is a reason to pull this movie out and show it to a group at an event.
I wonder if Manhattan is, like, screened more in New York than elsewhere.
Well, yes, because I
definitely.
Andy, I like, was just about to say that. I was like, really? Like, well, do they everywhere screen Muppets?
So maybe the Muppet movie is more universally shown everywhere.
I know I saw the Muppet movie in Columbia, Missouri in 2010, and Caper just played here at the Parkway Theater in Minneapolis last weekend, you know, and my Manhattan wasn't part of either of those screening series.
Yeah, you know? I think it was a favorite to show, like, what, in the Central Park screening.
I think nearly there were so many outdoor movie series in New York, and I think pretty much every year one of them showed Muppets Take Manhattan.
Yeah.
Right. But that
yes,
makes sense.
That's a New York thing, of course. Yes, you're right. That's that my
you're so
the data that was available to me was skewed for those years of my life. Yes. Good point.
But with that said, I would watch Muppets Take Manhattan on my own. I don't need a group for that.
Yeah, that's your go-to.
That's right? My go-to Muppet movie.
Right. Yeah. You tried to kick me off the podcast for that whole season.
I did not take any actions to kick you off.
That's true.
Yeah. Okay, then that's it. We can wrap things up for this week. Listeners, find us everywhere on the internet. Thanks to Morgan Davey for our logo. I'm on Letterboxd at Movies Are Neat. Anthony is on Letterboxd at Zeppo Marxist. Stacey, tell everyone again where they can find you and or your work or whatever on the internet.
I'm around. If you want to find me, you probably could. I'm Stacey with an I, Rosen.
Okay.
And I have various aliases.
People should read your articles on Tough Pigs for sure.
Yes, go on Tough Pigs under author Stacey Rosen. Yeah. And see what I've contributed over
there. Including the one that was nominated for the best Tough Pigs article of all time tournament bracket, which is about when you were an adult and suddenly realized that Sesame Street was not real.
Yeah, that was a big moment for me.
Yeah, classic article. So check those things out, and also, listeners, we love positive reviews, and we love it when you tell everyone you know, including 38 Muppet performers, to listen to this show. And please join us again, because we have another episode left in this season. We got more to talk about, not just credits. I'm sure we'll have some other notes too. I hope we will. I hope they're interesting. Next week, another episode
of... One never knows.
Another episode of Moving Right Along. Bye.
Go watch Paddington 2.
Yeah, cosigned.